What was he wearing? Well, he was wearing a red Argyle sweater and tan trousers and red shoes. No, he's not retarded.
Game 7 of the 2003 ALCS, Grady Little famously left Pedro Martinez in to face a few batters too many, leaving the Red Sox to fall at the hands of the hated New York Yankees. In a fit of despair, I struck back the only way I could, the only way I knew how to. I started a blog. That'll show them, I figured. And now, two World Series championships, and 9 seasons later, I'm still doing this. I still have no idea what I'm doing. How exactly does one become a Red Sox blogger? More importantly, when do they ever get to stop? These are the questions that sometimes keep me up at night. My name is Red. This is another Surviving Grady podcast. And tonight's podcast, we're going to take a look at the quote-unquote fine art of Red Sox blogging. And joining me tonight are two people crazy enough to actually have been doing this longer than me. Jerry from Red Sox Fan from Pinstripe Territory and Alan from Joy of Sox. Both of you, thank you very much for joining me tonight. Denton is ill, but I'm here, and I thank you both for joining me. I've been doing this since 2004. Jerry, yours you started yours on the cusp of the 2004 season. Alan, you were actually a year ahead of both of us. That's a long time to be doing something like this. Alan, starting with you, how did it start? How did Joy of Sox, how did the idea come to you, the idea of actually blogging? How did you get into the whole thing?
I had started a Pedro Martinez site around in 2000 or so, just a fun project where I would, do pitch by pitch of his starts and link to newspaper articles, and it was pretty much just focused on him. In spring training in 2003, I started kind of a bloggy type thing on that website, which was more about the team and commenting about what was going on in spring training and the beginning of that season and venting about various things. It was pretty much a blog then, but it wasn't until August of 2003 that I actually started Joy of Sox, just kind of took it away from that and made it specifically about the entire team. Why I started it, I don't really know. just a desire, I guess, to talk about the team and complain about the team.
Jerry, for a Red Sox fan, it was in Pinstripe Territory at the time because you were right in New York. So I'd imagine being in New York only fueled the fires of anger and angst. Is that part of the was that part of the genesis of the blog?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was coming from a unique perspective. I was actually in Connecticut, but the Yankee side of Connecticut. I grew up like a bike ride from the New York border, so I was like in the heart of it. And around that time, I mean, as you can imagine, the Yankees had won, 4 out of 5 or whatever the hell it was, a lot.
Right.
And
those are the Yankee salad days.
Yeah, and it was when, around that area, just growing up there, everybody just seemed like a bandwagoner anyway. They just wanted to have all the championships under their belt anyway. And then to add on, 4 more, that was the height of it. So on top of that, I'm like the only Red Sox fan in my town, basically. And I couldn't even see my team. I'm from the one county in Connecticut that does not get Nessun. I mean, or the one county in New England, I should say, that doesn't get Nessun because it's considered part of Yankee land.
Uh-huh.
So coming from that perspective, it was like I kind of had a lot how I wanted to say about just that whole thing and just, not being able to see your team and being amongst the fans of another team is one thing, but to have that happen in 2003 and the teams involved are Red Sox and Yankees, that requires like a whole other thing. So then all of a sudden, I wanted to make a documentary or something. Not like I knew how to do that, but I wanted to make something just kind of describing what I was going through. Mm-hmm. And then my girlfriend at the time said, "Why don't you start a blog?" And I said, "What's a blog?" And it's a free thing, which is key because, people had websites, but it was something you had to like pay for and know how to do, which I had no idea how to make a website, but a blog is something anybody could do. So I started it, and I haven't stopped.
Excellent. I'll ask, throw this back to Alan. And when you started your blog, did you have any specific goal. I say goal, and I kind of use it loosely, because I know when I started surviving Grady, or I should say when myself and Denton started, it was kind of similar to both of your cases. It was really just the idea of venting about the team, of having, it seemed healthier than, you know, punching a truck or something like that. It just seemed like a better way to get out this anger that I felt and the way I would actually take the losses so personally. And it was something that, you know, my dad would always say, you know, these guys are going home to their mansions and their 18-year-old girlfriends, and you're giving yourself an ulcer over here. But it bothered me so much. I really lived and died with the ups and downs of the team. But when I started, I really didn't have any foresight beyond it, other than the fact that it's 2003, it's 2004. I'm still so angry about 2003. I don't know what's going to happen this season, but I've got to start writing just to get this stuff out of my system. I didn't really have any long-term goal, but Alan, when you started Joy of Sox, was there anything that you know, did you have any kind of a game plan, if you will? Was it like, well, I'll do this for a while, then maybe it'll lead to this, or was it just sort of, you know, just being able to get it all down on paper, so to speak?
It was a hobby more than anything, I think, you know. I wasn't collecting stamps or building model airplanes or something. I was just doing this blog. It wasn't started in anger. That came a few months later in earnest. As far as starting it, I was thinking before you called that, when I was a kid, I was like 10 or 11, I used to make mock-up sports pages. Mm-hmm. And I would kind of like either like retype the Associated Press wire stories, you know, for games and box scores and stuff and on a typewriter and kind of make my own little newspaper, which I think is in many respects is kind of like a blog, or blogs are kind of like that. You know, so I don't know if that's kind of neat that I've like kind of graduated up to that, or if I haven't evolved since I was 10. I'm not sure about that. But I, you know, even when I started, I don't really know. I can't really remember how, if there were like a lot of blogs and people were kind of using that as a stepping stone, like almost 10 years ago. I don't really know if that's the case. But I had no thoughts of that. I mean, I'd obviously been writing for a long time and had written the book about the 1918 Red Sox a couple years before. So this was just kind of a thing I just felt like doing. It's really weird. Like I don't really know how I came up with the name, and I don't really know what the overall start was.
It's a genius name, and I hope you saw some royalties from Sports Illustrated when they threw that on the cover of their 2004 issue. After the Sox won the World Series,
I've seen nothing.
No,
I've seen not a penny.
That's criminal. Jerry, what about you? When you started your blog, was there any kind of long term plan in set in stone? Or was it just sort of like, you know, you're in this, you know, you're surrounded by the enemy, so to speak. You can't even watch your favorite team. Was it just kind of the here and now, and not so much a long view when you started it?
Yeah, I didn't really have any like long term goals of it, and also there's the fact that back then there was nowhere to go but text. You know, it was all about writing about the team. Even getting a video up online, that was just unheard of, at least in my house in early 2004. And, you know, I couldn't even put pictures on that. I didn't even know how to figure out how to do that. So, in fact, the first few months didn't even have comments. It was just me. So, me writing. So there was no real, it went in different ways as technology grew. You know, it went in crazy new directions I never would have thought. Like, hey, I can put a picture up on a website, you know. But it's funny that Alan talked about doing stuff when he was a kid, because that was me. I had the notebook. I cut out the box score and the picture, like any pictures the New York Times would have of Red Sox, and put them in a little notebook. And blog is just a way for finally someone to see it besides my mom.
It's interesting to look at how, I mean, despite the fact that, you know, that we're all pretty humble people here, all fairly modest. But in reality, looking at the grand scheme of blogs and how the quote-unquote blogging world has changed, it is kind of between the three of our blogs. They're sort of, I don't want to use the word pioneers, but they've been around a long time now when you consider the lifespan of some blogs and how things have changed. Since you've started yours, Alan, what have been some of the highlights and the lowlights, some of the things that are pretty awesome, maybe some things that haven't been so awesome about your quote-unquote blogging career?
Highlights, I guess I would say the main highlight actually has nothing to do with baseball. A commenter from the blog needed a working car to take his wife to chemo appointments. He lives, I think, in North Carolina. And we were able to, people either who read or read and comment, to raise $3,000 for him, and he was able to get a car that actually ran. I would say that's probably the best thing the blog has been used for. And we actually, in July of 2009, had a get-together at Fenway Park, which I think you have done, too, with commenters from your blog, too. But anyway, he was able to drive up and meet us and about 20 other people for a game, which was also fun.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, I really felt good about that.
That's another interesting. I'm sorry, but you also point on the sort of quote unquote communities that these things build up to, and I think that's a great thing too. That story you just alluded to is kind of phenomenal. It's these people. We kind of had the same thing too with Grady, where you know they're the people who I've met these people and hung around with them, and these people from all over the country who never would have, and they're great friends. Some of them who have interacted through the site and through Facebook and things like that. You kind of see these friendships evolving, and they're friendships that really started with people commenting or you know saying something bad about Julio Lugo or something in the comments section. Someone says, "Hey, I feel the same way," and it kind of branches out. It's interesting to see these things evolve and. I kind of concur. If there's one thing, there isn't much I can point to Grady and say we've contributed to the better of society, but I can say that it's been kind of probably the best thing has been the fact that these friendships have evolved through the comments section, which has been kind of nice, and it's nice to see that. It's nice to see people come together who would not have otherwise come together if we hadn't had that forum. So, and the fact that you folks are able to do it for something as good as someone being able to get to chemo appointments is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, it really puts the lie to the, I don't know how much this is talked about now, but the internet kind of decreasing community and interaction between people. I mean, I think it's just the opposite. You know, I mean, we have game threads on Joy Sox, and I know other places have them too. I mean, a number of people are from Boston or New England, but we have, you know, people from California and North Carolina and the UK, I'm outside Toronto. I mean, there's just people all over the place, you know, ages from like teenagers to middle age. It's really cool. I mean, and a lot of these people wouldn't have anybody else to watch the game with, and they're able to log on and chat and commiserate and celebrate with other fans.
That's phenomenal. Jerry, what about you on your side in terms of what you would consider to be some of the highlights? I will say one thing that I'm a very big fan of your writing, and I love your sense of humor, and obviously the hatred of the Yankees is otherworldly in its passion. But you also on your site, and I'll obviously give you the chance to answer. I don't want to answer for you, but I will say that You have a lot of, in addition to the stories, you've got a lot of great photographs. Every time a nice thing about your blog is when you go to the games, you almost get to take your readers with you. You know, you put up a huge amount of photographs from each game and almost invite them along on the trip you just took. It's kind of interesting. But also, among some of the video clips that you put in there, you had a video clip there one time, and I'm surprised this thing hasn't somehow gone viral or been nominated for an Emmy or something, but it was a video that looked like you had shot that had Jerry and Dio trying to get into a ballpark, and it looks like they either didn't have their credentials or something, but it was almost like Manny walked past them, Manny Ramirez, and he got in, and it was just this, just, if you watch the video, it almost looks like Manny, like, kind of didn't vouch for them, he just kind of kept on walking past the security guard. There's something very Spinal Tap about the whole scene, and I might have emailed you when that initially, when I saw that. It was a phenomenal clip, and kudos for that, because that's one of the, that's why God invented the internet, for stuff like that.
Well, I mean, about that clip, I was in Cleveland, and I just was standing. My friend was supposed to go with me to see the Red Sox play in Cleveland, and they didn't go, so I ended up by myself. So I'm just hanging around the stadium with plenty of other people that were like hanging around in that area, just waiting for players to come by, and that just happened. Manny just walked right by, and they're waiting, and the guy is checking his clipboard, like, I'm not sure I know about you, you know. But, oh, Manny, like, yeah, go on. And then he just leaves Don and Jerry at the door. And, yeah, I kind of thought that would have been, like, I mean, that got a lot of views, but one of the reasons it got, like, some views was because, on Remy himself, he had a bunch of videos up, and that was coming up as, like, the suggested video, like, after you watch the real, like, whatever Remy was doing.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And then, so people saw it from that, but other than that, yeah, it didn't go as mainstream as I would have liked either, but it was pretty funny.
That's a classic.
But yeah, about highlights from my blog, I'm also going to go the sentimental route here, because I met my girlfriend because of my blog, and we've been together for seven plus years, so she was a Red Sox blogger too, and at the time, she was married to somebody else. That was like, so, you know, when I saw her blog, I was like, oh, that's cool. But, you know, I didn't think any kind of romantic thing, you know.
Right.
And then pretty soon, before you know it, she was out of that relationship and in one with me. So, yeah, you actually can, this whole, like, meeting people online, I'm not Mr. like online dating type guy. I'm not even on Facebook. Like, I'm not the most social guy, but from my blog, like, I've met probably, like, I think almost 20 people from just that knew me from just finding my blog. And we ended up meeting, you know, usually at Fenway Park as opposed to, like, in a back alley or whatever.
Exactly.
We plan it out.
Never recommended.
right. But, yeah, just the fact that it actually became a community. And like, Alan, you know, like, me and him have been doing this a long time together, and I got to meet him at his, when they had the meetup at Fenway, so that was pretty cool, and meet a lot of people I knew from his blog. So between the Joy of Sox community that I'm also a part of and my own community, it's like I've probably met, you know, 40, 50 people out of that, and that's a highlight.
It's fantastic, and it also, I think that further supports something you said, Alan, about, you know, all this talk about the internet and social media making us less personal people, making us, you know, secluding us further. I think this flies in the face of that. It's a nice addendum. It's a way that we are bringing people together, not only online but also in person. So, I think that's a good thing. One question I have for both of you is, we mentioned we've been doing this for quite a while. In your opinion, I hate to use the term blogging community, because I sound like some guy teaching a class at the YMCA or something, but how has the art of blogging, the blogging community, or anything, have you noticed any significant changes since you started blogging? And I'll preface this again with something, Jerry, that you had said many, many moons ago, and I'll never forget this. I found it very interesting, and it was interesting to see it sort of evolve. It's a couple of years ago. Actually, it was a while ago. Probably around 2006, 2007. And I know when I started blogging and blogs, maybe even after 2004, after the Red Sox won, there seemed to be a lot of focus on the blogs. You saw the Globe used to have an insert that they quoted a lot of blogs in, and they had ours in there every once in a while, and it was not exactly a rise to prominence, but you were seeing more attention paid to them, and there was perhaps among some of the sports writers, the mainstream sports writers, there was that whole, you know, the mother's basement sentiment. And I remember at some point you had written something saying the tide started turning at one point, and you had written about how back when, you know, there was a time when all these sports writers, the Tony Maseratis of the world, the whomevers, the Dan Shaughnessys, would, you know, would comment about the bloggers from mother's basements. But then something interesting happened that you saw all of these mainstream writers, sports writers, newspapers started having blogs of their own. Suddenly it was Tony Maz's blog. It's Shaughnessy's blog.
Yep.
And it was interesting. It was interesting to me because it was something that was going on that I hadn't even realized until I saw you had written about it and posted something about it on your blog. And it was interesting to see that because it was almost something that was sort of not the idea of blogs. What are these things? They're, you know, they're insignificant. And then, you know, all of a sudden, all the major newspapers had to have their own as well. And the sports writers weren't just sports writers. They were also, I'm Tony Maz. I'm not just a sports writer. I'm a blogger, too. Here's my blog. Yeah. I still think what you said holds true. I think that was a very interesting, interesting to see that tide, that change occur in the mainstream media.
Yeah, that always kind of just seemed unfair to me. You know, it's like we in our mom's basements, you know, started our blog.
That's where I am right now.
Completely.
I am in a basement myself, yeah. I am.
I'm upstairs, so. You see. I've moved up, so. But,
Someday.
Yeah, we started it just completely from scratch. I mean, day one, I had zero readers, and probably day 61, I had zero readers, you know. But, so all of a sudden, any person that's already has an outlet, like, or is already famous, if they go and start something called a blog, well, they have a readership built in, and suddenly, you know, on the list of, here's a list of Red Sox blogs, like this fan's blog that he started from scratch, and then Dan Shaughnessy. Well, suddenly I'm competing with something that's already completely mainstream, you know. Right. So I did think that was kind of an unfair thing, especially the way they mocked, like you said, they mocked it first. And then caught on and kind of realized, like, well, if you're going to be writing on the internet every day, that you are writing a blog, or, you know, it's a semantics issue, but you're technically, that's what you're doing, so.
Well, they still mock it. They still mock it.
And they still.
As they're doing it.
Right, you know, right.
They're mocking blogs on their blog.
Exactly.
It's very bizarre.
Yeah. But also another thing about Facebook and stuff, it's interesting how, kind of the peak of the Red Sox, like, bandwagon, if you will, if you want to call it that, but just when the height of the popularity of the Red Sox kind of corresponded with the height of popularity of blogs. So then once it started tailing off, and then at the same time, Facebook started coming in, and people all said, like, I don't need to be going to these sites and going scrolling through the link section. I'm just going to go right to Facebook and, you know, Twitter and just do stuff right away, like, and get on with my life, you know.
Exactly.
It's almost like we're doing it the old-fashioned way all of a sudden, you know. It used to be like this new thing, blogs, and like very quickly it's like kind of becoming old-fashioned, so.
That's an excellent point. I think we lost Alan somewhere along the way. I think I bored him to death. He was finally like, what the fuck with these questions? I'm out of here. Have I still got you?
Yep.
Okay.
Hello?
Alan.
Yes.
Hi, I think we lost you. I hope we lost you. You didn't just hang up in disgust.
Was it something I said?
I know. He's gone. I said, I guess the questions weren't as intriguing as I thought, and Alan just hung up.
This is the low light that you were asking about.
Oh, by the way, I have a low light to mention, too, if we can go back to that.
We most certainly can. As a matter of fact, I had a low light, too, but I'll let you. I have plenty of low lights, but go ahead.
Okay, yeah. One low light, and I'm sure Alan's gonna, you know, once I say it, he'll be like, oh, right, that is a low light. But trolls, I mean, we have people that come to our blogs, I know he does too, that they're banned from our blogs from commenting by us, you know, we've had enough of them, they're rude, whatever. But they keep commenting, even though the comments don't go through. And I have a list of over 200 comments of the same guy. He must know that he's just writing to me, but nobody ever sees it, but I don't know, he just comments on my blog just all the time. I mean, he's like the biggest fan of the whole blog. He must be, because he's constantly been there for years, and I know Alan has the same type of people following him.
It's an interesting phenomenon. It really is. I wouldn't call it a low light. It's amusing. I mean, you know, and it has no impact on the blog whatsoever, because no one ever sees them, but the fact that the one particular troll that I have in particular, I think he follows the game threads, because we've been, you know, going along with a game, and somebody pops a home run or somebody grounds into a double play, within 2 minutes, he's posted something saying, ha ha, you know, you guys are losers. Or they lose a game, and within 2 minutes of the final out, there's a comment waiting to be moderated. It's wild. I mean, I can't imagine doing that to like a Yankee blog that has banned me like 4 years ago. And doing it like, you know, pretty much three or four times a week for the entire season, year after year. I don't know. I guess I should feel honored, you know, that I'm like,
yeah, and I'm
so fascinating, but
I have my own friends that are Yankee fans that I can go make fun of them when the Yankees lose. I'm not going to go to strangers on the internet. I mean,
exactly. Last question. What is it, and Jerry, I'll start with you. What keeps you going? I mean, you've been doing this for so many years. You're posting on practically every day, and not just these little blurbs. I mean, it's some big ass content going up there a lot of times. There's a lot of words being churned out. After all these years, what is it that keeps you going? What is it that drives you to keep doing it?
Partially, it's because, like you said, it's like I can't stop. You know, it's like I always have an opinion on the Red Sox. Like, that's always was there in my life, you know, before, and it's always going to be there. So I know that I can. So that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, it's not why I keep doing it, but that kind of prevents me from stopping, I guess. But I do want to, you know, be, you know, for the people out there that crave content, you know, I want to be there for them, because I don't know why people think, you know, 140 characters is like this great thing, but, you know, when I want to read about something, I want to read a lot about it. You know, I really want to get to know what I'm reading about, you know. I don't want a blurb. So, you know, I like to think I offer like this unique perspective that's from a fan's point of view, not the media's point of view, which is to me like so far off from what fans go through. So it's like, if, you know, I hope that people that maybe don't live around here or whatever, or, you know, want to know what a Red Sox fan like really thinks about the Red Sox, as opposed to just like chicken and beer. So, you know, I feel like I have something to say about the Red Sox, always will. So I'm just going to keep doing this, I guess. I try to be entertaining. I mean, I don't know. It's probably entertaining to like maybe 5% of the population, but, you know, as long as they're sticking with me, like as long as there's one person, you know, I think I'll keep doing it.
To be able to put that personal insight and personal spin on these things, I think, is what makes each of these blogs unique, and I think that's what makes it that makes that connection with an audience. What do you think about that, Alan?
I don't know. I do want to say, as far as chicken and beer, though, that I will continue to drink during games. I'm not stopping. Can't stop.
Isn't this ironic? I mean, I'm a straight edge vegetarian, and Yankee fans are making fun of me for chicken and beer. What is going on? The whole thing is just completely off the wall, but it doesn't stop for some reason.
What do you think about Bobby Valentine? You excited to see him?
I was hoping Denton would be part of this, because I think I had seen on some, you guys had back to back posts where you seemed to be on opposite sides of the Valentine issue.
Denton seems decidedly anti-Valentine, but unless they give you reason to, a la Grady, my attitude has always been you dance with who you brought, and you know, he's the manager of the team that I root for, so you know, you got to give him the benefit of the doubt until such time that he proves inept or pulls a Grady or whatnot, in which case it's it's all pain all the time. But where do you stand on Valentine?
I am warming to him, I guess. I mean, it is kind of, what'd you say, dance with who you brung? We're not really bringing him. He was sort of like set up on a date with us, I suppose. More.
That's an even better analogy. I like that.
Yeah. But I was skeptical. I absolutely ridiculed the idea when it was first mentioned in the papers. I thought there's absolutely no way on earth that would happen, but it has. I guess I've seen a fair amount of progressive ideas from him, and he seems to be, you know, whether he's just saying this or, you know, he honestly believes it, or it's some mix of the two, I've been pretty pleased with what I've heard out of him. I mean, I it has nothing to do with playing the game or anything, but I loved his extra comments about Ozzie Guillen. You know, the whole "see you" and then Guillen saying, you know, "go F yourself." Valentine said, "isn't that his response to everything?" when doesn't he say that?
And this is just spring training.
and his stuff about the Yankees, I mean, there was a particularly idiotic columnist for ESPN New York had it in his head that the Yankees were in Valentine's head, and that's why he was saying all this stuff about, you know, the Jeter play and the Veritek beating up Flappy, you know. I mean, it's obviously just the opposite. He's just like tweaking them and having fun. It should be interesting. I mean, I made myself a promise. I'm not gonna give him any grief or, you know, rip him or anything until the game start. And I'll just take it one game at a time, I guess, you know, like you're supposed to do, and see how he does. But I'm all right so far.
Excellent. All right, I kind of lied about the last question. This is the last question, and Jerry, I'll ask you this first. With all due respect to any significant others or children born or first house or anything or whatnot, was 2004 one of the greatest things that's ever happened to you in your life?
Of course. I mean, I also, you know, people usually say 2004. I think of it as 2005, because 2005 was the year where I was living in New York City and walking around with a Red Sox hat every single day, and that B on my hat was just like a laser beam that they weren't allowed to look into or they would die, you know? So it was, you know, 2004 led to 2005. So, yeah, after all those years, I mean, and for that, I mean, I always thought, you know, when we finally win, if we finally ever win in my lifetime, it's probably going to be in some way where the Yankees can say, like, oh, well, first of all, they'd say, like, I wasn't classy enough. And they'd say, like, oh, you didn't beat the best team or whatever. But for it to happen the way it happened, where there's just nothing they can say, you know, that was just, they talk about, like, Hollywood movies and stuff and how Hollywood wouldn't have believed it. Like, that's true. You wouldn't. Because 3-0 down, no one had ever even tied a series down 3-0. So, for all that to happen the way it did, yes, one of the best parts of my life, easily.
That's a great point about the Hollywood ending. Simply because I think that if after 2003, and I was in New Jersey when the final game of the 2003 ALCS went down, I was on a business trip, and it was they let me have it the next day at the office. It was brutal. And I remember coming back, and it took me, as I'm sure it did a lot of people, took a long time to get over that. And I think that if the gods of baseball or whomever had come to me after that and said, how do we make this up to you? I think the only answer would have been, next year I want to do this again, but I want them to have us 3-0, and I want to come back and win all 4 in a row. Because it was so improbable. It was something you wouldn't even have dreamed it. So just to say it, that would, at the time, if that question was posed to me, that would have been the only thing that would have taken the pain away. And the fact that it actually happened. Alan, does it still seem like it still seems weird to me. Do you feel the same way? It almost feels like, did that really happen? This many years later, I still look back and say, did it happen?
I was just about to say, you know, do you ever think, like, you know, you watch the videos, and it's like, well, this didn't really happen, though, did it? I mean, you know, you got the videos, you got the DVDs, you got the radio files, you know, you got all that stuff. But it was fantastic. I mean, it wasn't like, I don't really see that as one moment, though. It was just kind of a blur of like 10 days or so. You know, I mean, I always thought when they won the World Series that it would be some real nail-biting, just insane kind of, you know, seven-game series. And it was a fairly easy, you know, romp through four games, which is kind of weird. I mean, obviously the ALCS was completely different, but so it was kind of weird in that way. And then 2007 was like another sweep. It's really weird. Like, we haven't had like a real World Series battle, you know,
right?
In a very long time. It's very strange. But obviously, I mean, I never expected really, you know, to see one, or I at least wanted to see one. You know, and so to have that and then to have it again, you know, and I fully expect to see another one. I would say it's pretty cool. And I will say though that game seven in 2003 was absolutely the worst day of my life.
I'm with you on that.
And I turned 40 that day. And, yeah. And,
so did Tim Wakefield's kids.
I wanted to mention the age thing when you were talking about, you know, about blogs and how things have changed. And, I mean, I think maybe people starting blogs when they're younger, if like they're like, you know, in their early 20s, they're probably not going to keep that up by the time they're 30, because their lives changed so much.
Right.
In that time period. You know, whereas, you know, an older fart like myself is already stuck in a rut and can just kind of cruise along and do the same thing every day. But I don't know. I think I got off track.
No, I'm right with you on that, because I'm an old...
You know, and also, I think, you know, our three blogs, I mean, are very different from each other. Also, you know, and they have their readership, and I think that's, I mean, you know, you're not going to do like straight game recaps, and I'm not going to refer to my penis in every post, you know.
Sometimes I refer to Kevin Youkilis's penis too, so it's
I'll let you in on something. This is probably a few years ago, but I finally realized that you refer to your anatomy with some type of slang in every post, and I wanted to go through the posts and get them all. I wanted to see what they all were, but I never did that.
There's probably only about six. I think once you go through onions, berries, potato, I mean, this really grades, it's
yeah.
I found over
cheese,
the course of
cheese grater makes a fairly regular appearance as well, I think.
It does.
It's some sort of a torture device.
You know what's interesting? If you look at the and Denton's not here to defend himself, but if you look, and I certainly don't recommend this, but if you look back through our blog and you look at some of the archival stuff, if you look at 2004 and look at 2005, there's a very marked difference in the tone. Denton was kind of the yin to the yang. He was more grounded. He was more... You know, he was almost the voice of reason. I mean, he was the guy who had very thoughtful approaches to the game, and that the sun's going to come up tomorrow. And I was the more reactive. You know, this guy is awful. Let's throw him to the piranhas. This guy, you know, that sort of thing. I was the more reactionary. You know, the drunken lout. I don't know where this happened, but somewhere along the way, I noticed that basically everything any of us was putting up had some reference to the cheese grate or onions or something. It was kind of an interesting metamorphosis, but it's kind of what happened.
I feel like I'm both those guys on my blog, because I'm only one guy, so I kind of have both. It's like I like to sit back and like let something fester or whatever, you know, like and then write it with a clear head. But at the same time, I feel like my best work is when I'm, you know, the Yankees just won on like a bad call or something, and I'm just writing like as it's happening and just not even thinking about it, you know. And I'm just like, you know, before I even have a chance to like get my head about myself, you know, just let it flow. So
I think it's almost interesting. The one thing that I definitely recommend your blog for is that it really does pull the lid off the Yankee-centric thinking of Major League Baseball, and I know that makes absolutely no sense, but I'll give an example of something that you had posted a few days ago. Actually, it was a couple weeks ago. It was the beginning of spring training, but we're talking about a game recap. This is just a grapefruit game, but it was the game the Yankees romped, and they went like 11-0 or something like
that. Yeah.
And they had the highlights of the game, and of course you would think, you know, 11-0, you know, surely someone had some, you know, a lot of runs were driven in here. Who were the heroes of the game? But I think you had a screen cap from the game recap, and it had in big bold letters at the top, Derek Jeter, like 0 for 3 or something like that. You know,
right. 1 for 2 with a run scored, though. You know,
if for no other reason than just to have him on top, you know, Derek Jeter, here's what he did, you know, contributed absolutely nothing to this. But, you know.
Yeah, I figured out he should have been approximately like the 12th best star, you know, of that game on his own team, but they put him on top, so. And then I even went to, like, I don't really read Yankee blogs at all, but I went to, you know, I searched the news to see which Yankee blogs covered that, and they didn't mention him either. I mean, it was like, you know, why would you? But ESPN, or I think it was Major League Baseball Network, just, you know, we got to let you guys know, Jeter, he is alive. He played in the game. He scored one of the 11 runs. It was a vital run.
Yeah. That was the one that put him over the edge, the one he got. All right. Well, I've certainly overstayed my welcome on in terms of both of your times. If there's anything, any final thoughts you'd like to add, Alan? Anything you'd like to add? Anything you need to plug? Anything in the elevator pitch for Joy of Sox?
No. I just wanted to tack on something to you. You mentioned the change in tone after 04 or 05. I have found that. I mean, I would have called myself the most pessimistic fan that I knew. And 2004, completely unbeknownst to me and without, you know, it just happened, I became just a complete optimist. And it's next to impossible for me to really harbor any kind of annoyance at a loss, no matter who it's to or how it is. I pretty much just say, all right, well, we lost that game. Tomorrow's another game. And, I mean, I first noticed this after we got bounced in the DS in 05 by the White Sox. And it ended, and I didn't feel bad. I mean, you know, I wanted them to win and keep playing. But
right.
I didn't feel bad. It was like, all right, well, it wasn't our year. And there's another season coming up in a few months, you know. And I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked after being, if they hadn't have won in 04, I mean, I'm sure my obsession and my anger and you know, would have taken years off my life, you know, without a doubt. And they can lose to the Yankees, and it can be just a horrible, you know, management decision or an error or anything, and I'm fine within like a minute of the game. And I know there are other fans that feel this way, because I've mentioned this at Sons of Sam Horn sometimes. Not every fan is like this, I understand, and perhaps you're not, and perhaps Jer isn't, but it's been a fascinating, you know, maybe that's one of the highlights from the, it has nothing to do with the blog, you know, it's just having to do with a fan and having them win. Just taking that away. Never could have predicted it, but it happened, and it's like the gift that keeps on giving. It's just amazing. What do you think about that?
And that, I think, you know, that's an excellent point, because I would wager to say that the 2008 ALCS was a far more exciting, I'm able to acknowledge that as one of the more exciting playoff series that we did not end up the eventual victor in. I thought it was, a lot of those games were nail biters. It was thrilling baseball. I would have liked to have won and gone on to the World Series, and I certainly tip my cap to the Rays. But that was a good series, and I can't look back at the 2003 ALCS. I can't watch any of those games, because even though I know what's to come, it triggers that automatic vomit impulse in me. I can't watch it. It's to this day, it bothers me to watch anything pertaining to the 2003 ALCS. 2008, I can sit down and watch that. You know, it was a tough series to lose. We played our hearts on that. It was a great series. It was a thrilling series. But I'm far more comfortable watching that in the shadows of 2004 and 2007. If 2004 and 2007 hadn't happened, to your point, Alan, I probably would have lost my hands to severe injury right after that, you know, punching glass or the walls or Denton or something like that. know, as horrible as that loss was, that to lose that series, I was able to get up and walk away when it was over and shut the TV off and go upstairs and go to bed. Jerry, I don't know if you feel the same way, if you've noticed any kind of a lightening of the load in light of 2004, but I think I have.
Yeah, I wrote exactly what you guys are saying. That's what I wrote after the day after last season ended. I mean, we had this horrible collapse, and I just said, thank you, 2004 Red Sox, because, you know, not in a cop-out way, like, I'll just go watch Days of Past Glory, but in a way of, if they didn't do that, imagine what I'd be feeling right now, you know?
Right.
And it's also weird how people talk about this great collapse we had last year, and they don't know that we that have been there for a long time, we're laughing at you people saying, like, oh, my God, you chokers. Like, no, we just won a few years ago. Like, nothing that can happen now is this horrible thing that, like, anybody can get on us for, because we've seen the promised land, you know? I mean,
right.
It's almost like the people talking now, it's like such a, you know, our society is so, like, people only remember, like, the last few weeks, you know? So they're calling, oh, the Red Sox, that's that team that collapses. It's like, no, I actually have a memory that goes back several years.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been through that, and we got over it. So getting over this is nothing. So, you know, yeah, that's the difference.
And we had bigger collapses than last year anyway. That's like small fry, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
we know about collapse.
Yeah, there's been some bad stuff. There's a few more ulcers in the closet. So, well, some excellent points here, some excellent stuff. Thanks to both of you. Now, I've turned this from a quick discussion of blogging into an hour-long epic, but I thank you both for your time and your insight. Alan Wood from Joy of Sox and Jer Smith from Red Sox Fan from Pinstripe Territory. Two blogs. You can see them right on our sidebar there. We'll have links to them in this. There's links to them in this post, certainly worthy of your time. Recommended reading. Been around for a long time. Know what they're talking about, and we love them. We know you will too. Thanks very much to both of you for your time, and to everyone who's still listening. Thank you.
Thanks, Red.